All right. That funny story is going to have to wait. Brendan Devaney's in studio with me right now. We're previewing the DL debate. How many have you got for the rest of the year now? Because, I mean, obviously, in terms of on-the-pitch action, there's still some very important action, don't get me wrong.
Yes.
But we're heading towards Christmas now, a few short
weeks.
That's
it. Aye, listen, Greg, I suppose one of the few things I think I've any control of in life would be when the show finishes for the season.
Right, okay.
There's not too much I get to call the shots on, but yeah. On that one, we might look at next week. We have a couple of interviews lined up. Tomás O'Shea is coming on next week, actually. I was speaking to Darren Maloney, actually. He was to come on. But RT have this serious thing now, but nobody doing anything.
Outside of...
No, yeah, so obviously, Darren, you know you're not getting paid.
You're not going to get paid, yeah. No,
but he was saying it's such a hot issue up there now. And I tell you what, Greg, he is such a nice fella. You know, yeah. You see him on all the
time. Well, listen, not getting into the ins and outs of it, but I mean, you know, the more... highly respected RTE people are heard in different places, the better it is for the...
I mean, it was more about him, but the man being a bike, because I would see him at a lot of games, Greg, and honestly, not that you meet different people, he's such a nice fella, and I just wanted to talk to him a wee bit about his own kind of life in it, and I enjoy them type of stories as well, because you often don't hear from those type of people in terms of their experiences and that. So, but listen, he had to pull out, but Tomás O'Shea's on, we're sussing out Jim McGuinness, if we can get a hold of him, get a time with him. So it'd be a nice way to finish up the year. And of course, Downing's are going for now what is an All-Ireland semi-final.
Talk to me about the significance of, it's a relatively newly formed senior team, senior ladies. I mean, 7 or 8 years, okay. How difficult is it to progress in a season to an All-Ireland semi-final? I mean, also championship in the bag now after their extra time win at the weekend, and now on to the last four in the country. I mean, it's no mean feat.
It's an amazing story. No more than Niamh Patrick Muff.
Which we'll get to,
First time in it. So I suppose it's kind of uncharted waters. You know, you talk a lot about maybe from early level St. Union's, you see a lot of the same teams, and, you know, it looks like they need experience, a lot of teams. You know, if you look at teams going under that, they benefit from different years, and quite often that experience tells in further campaigns. But if you're at different levels there, obviously, you know, Niamh Patrick Muff will be up in the intermediate championship next year. So you've got different levels and things happening, and sometimes teams just go on a great run. But for Downing's, as I say, with McGrady and Kernan there at the helm, you know, they have serious experience. Obviously, Barney's brother Maxie has, you know, been the main ladies football guy around there. So the two lads have always worked with each other. So they bring through this group of players, and to achieve what they achieved, no extra time victory. So it came right down to the wire. And to believe, Greg, you're one game now away from an All-Ireland final, I mean, Ulster, this is already a dream. Yeah. But to think you could play on the biggest game of the season, you could potentially be down to the last two teams in Ireland.
It's
amazing.
Kilcock from Kildare that are next. And there's also nothing to suggest that they can't go and do it. They seem to have the right mix of youth and experience, but they also have big players. You know, any team at any level, you need players that step up. And they had, the whole team stepped up, but they had a couple of players that really stepped up on the day.
Yeah. So when you see, when it's low-scoring game, like Greg, I suppose taking your opportunities and possession is key. And I suppose when you don't have teams that haven't played each other before, and you're trying to suss out where is a whole province at in terms of quality now. So you might look at certain counties and you might think they're a bit weaker than others in terms of football. But once you get out into it, it's very hard to tell, of course, at the different levels. Now you're into provincial level. So it's very hard to say what their opposition's like. And I know that the two lads will be sussing out videos and making calls to people and trying to find information on Kilcock.
I mean, one thing stood out for me too, from the Downing's performance as well, it was defensively they were excellent, in that it was the type of game the ball was sort of in the opposition third for quite a lot of time, and to defend but not concede fouls, which would have just been, you know, 3 points effectively. It's not an easy trait, I would say. You mentioned Niamh Porrick as well. They're through to the Ulster final. They're keeping their season going deep into the winter.
That's it. Well, listen, yeah, I suppose that type of commitment, I suppose, yeah, it's not to be, I suppose we laugh about it. I think when you're on a 1 year run, it's absolutely brilliant and everything's put aside. But you can imagine, I think back to some of those great football teams. I mean, Aaron Cairns on with me tonight, his Cross McGlenn team, And his Armagh team were very successful. And I was just thinking, year in, year out, you are going into the depth of football. Mm. And I just think the commitment, say, of the family and, of course, the community and everybody to that. But, of course, they're proud of that. And that's what they did, you think, sometimes. So it's really, there's a lot of football. If you play with a very successful county team now and club team, there's a lot of demands on you. And I'm sure the odd time, maybe if a club goes out early, probably thinking, we could have done with this wee break. But as it is, they don't mind first time in. And I say, it wasn't just that they won their semi-final. They absolutely destroyed College and of Armagh. So again, having seen Niamh Patrick play, and mentioned this a few times, Greg, they were set up like a senior team in terms of their preparation, their fitness, and how they played the game. Of course, they were sweating on the fitness of Keelan McCaughan and by Kevin Lynch up front. Now, McCaughan did come on sub, so hopefully he'll be back now. Whether Lynch has an ongoing injury, but he is such a brilliant player for them. So listen, they now are in on the no more than downing, so ready for a bit of history making. An Ulster final one would be absolutely phenomenal.
And it means so much. This is I think this is the what's so special about club football. The county stuff's brilliant, don't get me wrong. But these are your sisters, your cousins, your uncles, your cousins. You know what I'm on about? This is really right in the heart of your community. Yeah. And the joy it brings is just something else.
Yeah. So that was our first junior championship. Yeah. So the role that they're on now, when they won at the Ulster, listen, again, it is more or less that let's have a go. It wasn't their aim at the start of the season, but it becomes your aim then once you won it. So the fact that they won their two games so well, particularly at the weekend's match here. So listen, myself and Brendan Kilcoyne and Oisin will be up bringing it all live.
Yes, excellent. And home tie for Downings too, which is a great prize in and of itself. So you've got Aaron Kiernan on here, and there's an interesting conversation you're going to have in terms of new rules, changes to the rules for 2025. And interestingly too, because this is the conversation that's come up in relation to them, and, you know, it's one thing doing it in Croke Park. It's another thing doing it in a windswept pitch in Ballintra, you know, and that's the implementation of the rules. So talk to me about that conversation you're going to have this evening.
Yeah, well, Mark Dorian and Enda McFeely, they are two national refs. You know, that there was a meeting in Abbottstown there last Monday just to go through the implementation of it, which is a huge side of it, as we know. We're drastically changing. I mean, I know the relics out there, the number seven, you know, the seven levels of heaven and what have you. So they've ticked seven rules. Right now, to me, and it'll be interesting because the guys can give their view on this, I don't see why we need seven rule changes. You know?
Are they adapted now?
They are coming in now. The club won't be facing it this year. Mm. It's not the following year.
Right.
So it's just county. So I know what you're saying. It would have been difficult, you know, because you think about they're going to obviously have their linesmen, their fourth official and their umpires, and they're all mic'd up. And that's going to be a huge side of implementing the seven rules, which obviously people have to get used to.
It was very technical.
Very technical. Like, as I'm reading through them, and I was writing them out today and looking at them pre-talking to the refs, I just keep saying to myself, why?
Throw some up, but where's the why?
Well, listen, yeah, I mean, the 1v1, the throw-in, I want to know why the refs thought that this was needed. I know there's a bit of a struggle on it. You could just put them a couple of yards apart so they're not jostling and throw it up. You know, I think what happened here was we put some of our good GA minds, some of our best minds together, and there was too much. There was too much being thrown up. Mm. I mean, the GA is going on about 140 odd years. You can't change your scoring for a start. And I mean, the mark thing isn't part of our game, so they've changed the mark now, so it has to be inside the 21. Again, just scrap it. It doesn't need to be there. And the three up scenario, right? Just make it four up. Keep the keeper inside the 45. And that's it. I don't think your game needed anything else. Let it play from there. So, you know, the solo and go thing, like rugby, you see there. So the guy's fouled, then it's up to him. He can take a tap and go. Now, automatically there, if the ref blows for a free, play will stop, because that's what we've been conditioned to do. So you could have a guy, so a bang, he's gone, back of the net. Now, I don't think that's fair and defensive, because you automatically are going to stop. So it's a wee bit like the mark scenario. Can you take the mark? Can you not? Where does the defender mark then? Is he front, behind, and all that? So I think there's too much of this creating.
In terms of solo and go, do you have to, say it's in an attacking position, does the defender have to be a certain distance from you?
No, it's just basically up to you.
Right.
So the ref blows for foul, I'm foul. I can tap and go like we see in rugby.
I got you.
Now, in rugby, you see, like, you've obviously, more often than not, there's obviously
a structure of defence.
Yeah, there's a structure of defence where that could be maybe the last two. So say the cornerback goes down to the fullback, he thinks then it's a foul. And next thing, tapping, he's away, and it's in the back of the net. So listen, the scoring system is the biggest thing. Greg Dark, the new arc. I mean, again, you're changing how our pitch is after all this time. And the 2 points thing, you know, even that for a set piece, 45 and the 4 points potentially for a goal. Now, this all still has to be completely ratified, Greg, but I just think that is so dangerous in terms of, say, a team's a point up and someone hits a shot. Now, that arc, we used it already. It was up in Gavahi there. It's not that far out. Like, it's a decent point, but it's definitely a very kickable area. Mm-hmm. So I just think if a team is a point up, you're automatically maybe going to drop a small bit. Next thing, somebody gets in, strikes a ball, and you're out. Mm. You know what I mean?
Someone messaged in, I'm not sure how accurate it is, that it's not actually fully decided that the club's deferred for a year. That's still offing.
No, thank you.
No, I'm not sure about that. That's what
I'd hear. That's what I was going to ask.
I'll read exactly what they say. That it's not correct yet. It hasn't been decided. The proposal is to reduce them across the board. But I think, given the complexities of it, I think it would make more sense to see it in action on the bigger scale before trying to implement it. Can you imagine trying to implement it at short notice?
It's just the amount of officials available, Greg, it probably would be the issue. And because there is seven now, whether these all go through and that all happens, to me, as I say, there's far too much in that. You know, we won't, if you
that's a complete reform of the game we're talking here, isn't it? This isn't one or two things to try and, you know, maybe make the games a little bit more open and what have you. I mean, this is quite a reform of the game as a whole.
But see,
it?
if you have three up, then you're more likely going to get, say, that kind of platform player inside. So you are going to kick it inside anyway. Mm. Now he then just with a diagonal kick, you would think it. I keep thinking Michael Murphy here straight away. So Michael Murphy could come out and you're not going to get around him. He's going to mark that quite easily. So it actually puts a wild lot of pressure on the defender.
Well, can I ask
you
a question, right? So just in relation to these rules as they are fully implemented, hypothetically, okay? So you have St Union's into the final, right? Okay, experience, been on it forever. You've done low. They've had a great year, but they're not quite at the level St Union's are at, okay? So those two go into the final. How do these rules make it a more open, fluid, maybe even more even game?
Well, obviously... If they do. Yeah. Well, listen, I think the scoring system is meant to kind of keep us on edge so teams aren't defending leads and they're not sitting in because you can't get picked off. So what it's trying to do is just encourage end-to-end football.
But does that happen? So I shouldn't have used two teams as an example because I don't want to sort of say St Unions are up here and Dunlow are down there. But my point is does this not mean that the better team, the more equipped team, the team with the better kickers or more county players or whatever, actually is advantaged?
Well,
in other words, a good team... actually, forget my example of those two teams. A good team, instead of being contained maybe and playing out defensively, could be 1-15 up in 20 minutes.
Well, you see...
And that game's over.
Well, the good team should be leading. Do you know what I mean? That's just sport.
No, I know about that, yes, but we could see shutouts really early on in the game, no?
But, you see, the thing is, everybody has to, deal with that. You've got to deal with how do you make the best of what the scoring system is or what the rules
is? Well, that's what I'm asking you. Do you believe then a weaker team can adapt with the skill set and the players they have available to them? In other words, does this narrow the gap between the better teams and the weaker teams, and the weaker teams can set up in such a way, right, to grind out a victory? Or does this widen the gap between the better team and the worst team?
That is a huge question, man. We would need a lot of time to go through all that.
Okay.
Because that's massive. Me and you
but that's fundamentally what it comes down to.
Well, listen, it's very hard to say.
Well, why else are we introducing them?
You're going to have to see what they're trying to do is stop the possession-based, extra men at the back type football. You build up slow, which everybody hates and is mind-numbingly killing the game.
True.
So what they're trying to do is, I appreciate them trying to do it, Greg, but I just think... Leave four up, keep your keeper inside the 45 and play it from there. That, I think that, quite simply, that would have corrected so much that's wrong and would have scrapped other things, but what do I know?
You know quite a lot. That's why you have your own podcast. You're on everyone else's podcast and people want your views. He's going to be getting the views as well as sticking his own in from Aaron Kernan. The lads are going to have a look back at the GAA stories of the week, as you can imagine. Armagh legend Aaron Kernan is going to look back at all the highlights from the Ulster club, plus fresh from the National Referees meeting, as we've just mentioned. Top officials Mark Dorian and Enda McFeely, they'll be on the show to discuss potential new rules for 2025 and critically, the implementation of those rules. So you're going to have two whistleblowers there who know exactly how a game plays out, right, and how this will all be introduced. That's tonight after the 7 p.m. news. And, of course, it's a podcast available for you as soon as the broadcast is finished to listen to. I think you're looking forward to this one, aren't you?
Yeah, it should be good. I like having the refs on anyway. Greg, we should do it more often because we need to get their views and things.
But it's good that speak.
And
you know,
see,
I know from this show,
from their side,
we always, even in this show, in non, you know, sport, to actually get the people it affects is great that these two lads are chatting to you, because it can be difficult to tease out subjects because you don't always have access to the key players, which you do tonight. So it's going to make for a very interesting show.
I have to ask them about the penalty in the county final as well. They might want to answer that. Barney Kern, joint manager.
Are you still going on McGrady about that penalty?
I'm still going on about it. No, I want to.
You just don't let go.
It's everybody. In the
I would
county
have thought dancing around in front of 500 people would have cleansed your palate, but you're still going back to.
I still have the tights on. Hey, they're comfy, them tights.
Do you know what? So warm. Well, I'm not going to lie. Well, actually, I'm not going to talk about this. All I'll say is, 17 years of age, out working on a building site, freezing.
Yes,
you would do anything to keep warm.
Not long johns.
And I did
now,
not. I couldn't get long johns.
Long John, show me.
You've just actually, you've just given me a memory there. I'm not sure if it's true or not. Hey, Brent, good luck to
thanks,
you. Thanks
guys.
So much
cheers,
indeed
man.
For your time. Back after these.
The county's number one talk show, The 9 Till Noon Show on Highland Radio.
Very welcome back to The 9 Till Noon Show. We're going to be joined very shortly by Paddy Rooney and John McAteer for our latest, I suppose, look through what's happening in the general election locally and nationally. In fact, we might go to that now. We did speak to our two guests last Monday. As much changed since. We welcome back onto the show John McAteer of the Tyrconnell Tribune. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's great to see you again. And Paddy Rooney, our political analyst, also with us. Good morning, Paddy.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Fantastic. Morning. Paddy, I suppose I'll start with the national picture. I mean, it's not surprising to me that in the polls, for what they're worth, Sinn Féin are starting to gain a little. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael seem more interested, I suppose, in fighting amongst themselves, if I could put it like that. But there's been no great moves so far in this campaign. When's it going to ignite?
Well, I'm not sure, but a lot of the, listening or watching debates over the weekend on TV and radio, the general consensus is that the campaign has been very flat at the moment and it hasn't really ignited, and nobody can put their finger on that. But it may have something got to do with the fact that it's so far away. But of course, when I say that, we're between a third and a half way into it. So people need to get into this very, very soon. I know now there's a lot of material coming on the radio and the TV about Christmas, so people have to compete with that. But I would say it's something got to do with the fact, Greg and John, that people out there feel that there is no choice on offer here, because the polls are showing that the next government is probably going to have a fair colouring of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil in it. And they've either had a confidence and supply arrangement or a coalition arrangement for the last 8 years. The left is completely fragmented and has, I mean, I would say if you totted up all their figures, they might have 25, 26% of the electorate, but you can't get any, there might be as many as 7 or 8 political parties there, and you can't get them to to agree on anything. And then, of course, you have all of the goodies then that are being promised by all political parties across the board, and it's almost impossible to make sense of it all.
Okay.
So, John McAteer.
Yeah, John McAteer, the big movers, really, I suppose, are independents, up 20%, you know, as a grouping, as popular as all three parties there or thereabouts within the margin of error. So they don't have a load of money to promise. They don't have necessarily huge policy documents on everything from health to housing. Is that where the frustrated voter is seeking an alternative, John? Or do you read anything into that?
No, I don't read anything into that. There's a total disconnect here. People are not connecting with the politicians, they're not connecting with canvassers, but more than that, they're not contacting with the coalition partners in government. Sunday Times opinions poll yesterday showed Fine Gael on 23, Independence and others on 21, Fianna Fáil on 20, and Sinn Féin on 18, and the Social Democrats on 6, Labour and the Greens 4, and everybody else away below that. So what I see from that there is that that coalition had 53% of the vote last time. They're down now at 47 this time. They're not going to form a government on that, I don't think. They're going to struggle to do that, given that they have to get up to 90 seats. There's a disconnect there because I think there's a bit of a shambolic campaign in the race to give away money. I mean, Simon Harris, every time he's handed a mobile phone, he's handing out more and more millions. Yesterday afternoon, he was at the Fine Gael launch in Tipperary, and he handed out billions. $2 billion each year for infrastructure, climate and nature, and $4 to $5 billion into Future Ireland Fund. And there was $1 billion for disability services. There was injection of $100 billion into capital projects. There was, what, $40 billion for housing, and so on and so forth. 6,000 new Gardaí, a new Taunton Hall prison. That's back on the agenda again. It's been in mothballs for about 30 years. Then there's €1,000 for each newborn child. Mm-hmm. And then there's a certain category, there's more. So they're going to double the housing output.
Just in relation to that, I mean, you've said an awful lot of stuff there, but you know, if you talk to people out in the street, they're not talking about that. They're talking about Simon Harris backing Senator John McGahan as an election candidate down in Louth. He's standing by him. And that is... If they do a poll in 2 or 3 days, that is going to damage Fine Gael. It's astonishing, isn't it? For all the stuff you mentioned, all the goodies, the thing that might actually adjust the opinion polls is something like this conversation as to whether or not Simon Harris should back the senator.
The goodies are not resonating at all. But as you say there, the issue in down in Meath, Helen McEntee now has backed the Taoiseach on this one. This one, watch, is one to watch over the next couple of days. There are opinion polls coming out. Watch out for how this impacts on the Taoiseach's credibility and indeed on the wisdom of backing McGahan.
Yes, because I just don't know. Of course, Paddy, in relation to this, it's very fresh in people's minds, the questioning of Sinn Féin's handling of allegations against its members. This is a free opportunity for them to turn the tables directly on to Fine Gael. And I don't know what the right thing for Simon Harris and Fine Gael as a whole to do. Even if what they are doing is correct, once you are talking and once you are defending and once you are explaining, this is going to be dragged up a few times in this leaders' debate tonight. And I think it's critical as to how Simon Harris deals with it.
Absolutely. Hugh O'Connell said the journalist said there a couple of days ago, this is the third general election on the trot now that Fine Gael have started off with shoot themselves in the foot that was self-inflicted. It's something got to do with the fiscal space in 2016. I don't know what that was about. 20 then was about Charlie Flanagan and commemorating the RIC. And then we have Michael O'Leary last week. That seems to have gone away, and this is in the main now. I suppose that it's important to point out here that John McGarren, it looks bad. It's a bad look, but he wasn't convicted in a criminal court. And
It's very important that we apply the same rules, okay? Because the Sinn Féin senator didn't do anything illegal, was not convicted in a criminal court. And there was an awful lot of mileage made from that. And that defence for Sinn Féin wasn't accepted.
I was going to go on to say that because Conor Feehan and Ralph Regal have an article in the Irish Independent today about this. And they actually list a few people from other parties that are standing for the election. They have a criminal conviction behind them. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. It is a bad look. And the place where this is really going to be played out, I suppose, is in the constituency in County Louth, and let's see what the people view of it. But it's a very, very bad look because there is no doubt about it that if this had happened, if this was a Sinn Féin candidate, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael would be all over this like a rash. And, you know, let's see whether this, it'll be like the Michael O'Leary thing, will it go away? Or John said it might be like a snowball and it might turn into something here.
Yeah, I think it is the second for what my opinion is worth. John, I presume the Tyrconnell Tribune are doing the, or I shouldn't presume actually, the opinion poll. Is that the case?
That process is ongoing this week.
When's it going to be released?
That'll be next week.
Excellent. So we have then also the TG Cahir poll, which is going to be released later this week. They're two different things. I mean, the Tyrconnell...
TG Cahir poll's tomorrow night.
Now, they break it down into simple percentages, and I've jotted down as to how I think it's going to go. I don't think it can be made public because I might seem like I'm anti one thing or another, which I'm not. But I think this is going to throw up some surprises locally in terms of where the support is going, where the support is going within parties, and where maybe some people support the arse has fallen out of it. Or are you expecting, what are you expecting?
You'll get percentages. You will get percentages. Similar to Galway West last Thursday evening, was it? Fianna Fáil is down 10% there. Éamon O'Keefe is gone. Grainne Fhuaighe is on 7%. Fianna Fáil, their two candidates are on 7% there, and they're in a pretty... they're in a pretty tight corner. Fine Gael set to gain a seat there. We'll wait and see what the TG Cahir poll does for Donegal tomorrow, but it'll be interesting. It was interesting the last time. Our poll was not that far from it, but it was a bit more detailed.
Yeah, it all depends on the methodology. Now, your sample rate at the Tyrconnell, I'm not just saying this because you're on, but the sample rate from the Tyrconnell poll is massive. Which greatly narrows the margin of error. It doesn't then, obviously, we can't always go into the intricacies of second preferences and transfers. That's something we can discuss and debate after the fact. But it will be very interesting, Paddy, to see the raw percentages for Donegal candidates in this poll, I think.
It will. You started off your programme last week, Greg, by asking John and I to forecast about who was going to... and who did we think was going to do well and who we think wasn't going to do well. And hey presto, didn't I come across a quotation by RTE political correspondent Micheál Lahan in the RTE app on Saturday. And he quoted the Roman philosopher Cicero. He says, "You can always spot a fool, for he is the man who will tell you that he knows who is going to win an election." So can I formally withdraw the three names I gave you last week then, so I won't talk? It will be very interesting. I played a small role in that exercise the last time, and I hope to do it this time as well for the TT. And it's covered all over the place. But John's turns out to be very, very, very accurate. And I suppose it's about the comprehensive nature of it. But the other thing about it is because it's so close to the election. You might do a poll a month ago, and you might do one the day before the election. And the day before the one that's done the day before the election, if it's done properly, turns out to be very, very accurate. I mean, if you look at exit polls, for instance, and RT will be doing this at 10 o'clock on the 29th, they turn out to be really, really accurate, if people, are making their views known properly or truthfully.
We'll
see. There was one poll doing the rounds earlier on. I don't know where it came from or whatever, and it showed certain percentages, but we'll see. It will be very, very accurate. There's 20 candidates running here. Every candidate will get some kind of a meaningful vote. Some people will get more than others, but transfers is going to be really, really interesting how they're going to shake out on this occasion.
In terms of the amount of candidates, John, now some are independents or non-party, as the returning officer describes them. Others are members of smaller parties. They are members of parties, but it's kind of maybe the independent vote that might go in their direction. How does that, how does that, if at all, alter the outcome of the election here? Can we suppose... what percentage of the vote independents, maybe excluding Thomas Pringle and those of smaller parties, might get?
It's very difficult at this point, but generally speaking, the vast majority of independents don't save their deposits or don't come anywhere near it. She's a party woman. Mary T. Sweeney of Aintu could get 2,500 to 3,500 votes. That would be a high number there because... she's fighting a lone battle up here in Donegal. She has a team behind her, but Aintu doesn't have that much traction up here. And indeed, they don't have an awful lot of traction in general elections other than one their leader. And I would say that that's not going to change too much. I think one of the there's going to be a couple of very interesting things to look for here. Who's going to replace Joe McHugh? The dynamic for that seat has changed down to southwest Donegal, and there's a bit of an input from Milford that should pick up a substantial vote. Now we have no idea what that's going to be. Redress, Charles Warr for the 100% Redress Party. This is make or break time for them at this level of politics. They have a baseline of 7,500 there to work on. They're canvassing pretty hard, and they're out and about all over the place. It's always going to be an uphill battle for a new party because you're against the might of Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil. Sinn Féin is very, very busy on the ground, but Fianna Fáil has a campaign ongoing that I've never seen before. You think their very lives depend on it. There's some reason behind that. There's two things going on there. They're either looking for two seats or else they're trying to conceal the fact that they're in danger. Not too sure which of them is right. I'm not getting a great word back on the ground from any of the main parties, quite honestly. People are just disconnected with politics. There's a sort of malaise set in there that people just are not happy. They don't feel that politics is connecting with them. It's not representative of them. There's a lot of flack there about the fact that those big spends in the budget were not targeted, that those who are in poverty are still in poverty and will be.
Yeah, but does that not mean then, I'll ask you and then I'll ask Paddy, does that not mean then when we have such an emotive topic that affects so many people as defective concrete blocks that in a otherwise kind of, a grey campaign, when there's something that's so emotive and touches so many people, that it becomes maybe one of the, not becomes, it is then one of the big swings and one of the things that gets people out to actually vote? Because this election will be won by people who vote. It won't be influenced by those that don't vote.
The probable outcome is be there may be affected by those who don't vote, because there's a lot of evidence out there of people just registering their protest by not voting at all. I've got that more in this election campaign in the last 10 days than I've ever got before. Now, it's up to the politicians and their canvassers to get in on those doorsteps and convince people, first of all, to get out and vote, and secondly, to support their particular brand of politics. But we're not getting any of that there. We're not getting that. In real terms, the Mickey Redress Party should be flying, given the amount of Mickey issues that are in the whole county of Donegal. It doesn't work that way. There's a party loyalty there. There's a tradition there, and it's still there very strongly. Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, and nowadays Sinn Féin are going to be pretty strong. I see them getting their two seats without any big bother.
Sinn Féin, okay. Paddy Rooney, what's your view?
Well, I suppose in reference to the Charles Ward and his team, I mean, I and suppose everybody else in Donegal knows somebody. If they don't live in a house that's got Mica, they know somebody, or they know people that do live in a house with Mica. And all of the people that are involved, or most of them anyway, are actually reluctant politicians. They don't want to be here. The only reason they're in this gig is because they have to be, because they feel that they're not getting proper representation from the other parties, whatever kind of flags that the other parties are saying around them. But you know, given the fact that the independents are 21% nationally, that's a fifth of the total poll. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to play out here or whatever, but one of the things, I suppose, because the quota is going to be very high, John made reference to it last week, either we'll say one of the Sinn Féin candidates will probably top over that. It's likely then that nobody else will. So not alone your first preference vote, but it's going to be very, very important then that you're attractive to everybody else for you know, second preferences and stuff like that. And I think that's one area that Charles Ward could have a trump card over everybody else. He could turn out to be everybody else's second favourite candidate, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Which might give him a little bit of an edge there.
Just in terms of what's changed since last week, John, it's just a sense that you get from a Fine Gael perspective, and this is not an opinion, it's just an observation, that John McNulty's stock seems to be rising, not just out of his heartland, so to speak, that he's trying to get traction with Fine Gael voters far outside our draw, for an example. And also to the impact on Noel Jordan. I understand he's having a very successful campaign there down in and around Donegal Tan, Mount Charles, Killybegs, etc. And I just wonder, is he going to be drawing... this has made me wonder for Thomas Pringle's chances here, because you have another very strong candidate in that area who may not get over the line himself, but you imagine a lot of his second preferences are going to be heading north to Inishowen or west to the west. So those are just a couple of variables that seem to have emerged since our last conversation last week. I don't know if either of the two of you have any view on that.
John McNulty has been running very, very strongly. The constituency is now divided. Nicky Bradley has the Milford, Letterkenny and the Inishowen area, and that's a fairly substantial area. John McNulty has the rest of the constituency, but he had his canvassing done out
on
in this
paper,
part of the world.
On paper.
A lot will go back. We have been back here before. A lot will depend, not on John McNulty, because he's a good candidate. It will depend on the structure that he has behind him in the constituency executive and how they get out there and get that canvass done. Because realistically, no candidate will get half of their area canvassed, given the shortage of the very short evenings and very long nights, and people don't want to see you after 8 o'clock in the evening. Can Fine Gael win back that vote that they lost in the local elections? Of course, Fianna Fáil lost 4,000 votes as well, and that they're in a much stronger position. They're on about 17,000 votes. Fine Gael is about 3,500 votes short of a quarter. Fianna Fáil is that amount over the quarter. So there's a vast difference there. Sinn Féin's Noel Jordan, your reference there. You see, there are issues there that if Paddy McLaughlin and Piers Doherty can hold their 35,000 votes, that's 45%. If they can hold that, and Noel Jordan can get up to that 4 or 5% area, well then they'll be looking at the third seat. I'm not too sure if that's a runner.
Just in relation to though the consequences for the likes of Thomas Pringle with Noel Jordan running in his area, does that because I say some national speculation was is that the 100% redress might be the Achilles heel for Thomas Pringle. I don't see it like that at all myself personally, but just literally because of the geographical nature of the county. But if Pringle were to miss out, is it because of Noel Jordan doing well and transferring up the county, or what?
Pringle would have to increase his vote very, very substantially because he got almost 2,800 and whatever from Sinn Féin the last time, and it gave him that third seat. Now, Noel Jordan's participation there is expected to diminish Pringle's total vote of transfers. They're all crowded into a very, very... It's a small area, Donegal South West, given that there's 9,000 voters south of Lahey in Sligo Leitrim. John McNulty's in Kilcar, and you're going to have two other candidates in Noel Jordan and Mount Charles. Claudia Kennedy is in there with a vote as well, because she's from that Donegal, even though she's from further south than Lahey. But she'll pick up a vote there as well. Mm. We haven't spoken about her for Fianna Fáil. We don't know what her vote's going to be, but
I think she might resonate more in the east of the county.
Have an impact, you know.
Yeah, of course. Paddy?
Well, I was just going to make the point John sort of touched on it there anyway. There's literally two constituencies in this constituency, and I have a sense anyway that the southwest part of it, the old Donegal southwest, it's actually top-loaded with the heavy players here. I'm not diminishing all the other candidates in it, but Piers Doherty is in that area. He's going to be a contender. Pat the Cope is in that area. He's going to be a contender. Thomas Pringle is a sitting TD in that area. You've mentioned John McNulty, that he has prominence now the prominence in a Gael candidate in it. Noel Jordan is there. So then when you move up, we'll say, for instance, to Donegal North East, then you have Charlie McConlogue and you have Patrick McLaughlin sitting TDs. Now, not all of the five TDs are going to come from the one area. So Donegal South West is not going to have them all. So just by the very fate of geography here, it's going to scatter the seats around. I mean, there is a concentration of players already in the South West. In principle, a lot of their votes should go to each other, not all of them, but some of them. So they will either damage each other or they will help each other. We'll have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, indeed. I just think with the annexed Donegal, and just being from that area, I don't know if people vote sort of go, right, I'm going to just vote local. I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong in that. I don't know.
There's a mix.
It just doesn't feel like that down there for me.
There's a big mix in that. Pat De Cope, we haven't mentioned him. Pat De Cope has a decent campaign on the road, a very good campaign. He had a Coyle Cantor meeting in Gartahark last Tuesday night, and there was 50 people there, and a good buzz of excitement. And other parties would be lucky to get half that in number. Now, how he impacts beyond that, that remains to be seen. But he has a good campaign going, and he has put a lot of work on the ground over the last 4 years. So is he going to be in there in the final shake-up for that last seat? I suspect that he could easily be. So could Thomas Pringle, and so could Charles Ward. You know, like it's like that there. John McNulty, not so sure that all of them are going to be in that shake-up, you know.
Yes, but I mean, who are Fine Gael people? Fine Gael has huge support in Donegal. Who are they going to vote for if it's not for Nicky Bradley or John McNulty?
They don't have huge support in Donegal. They have decent support in Donegal. Joe McHugh managed to get over 8,000 votes the last time as a senior government minister. And Martin Harley done very, very well to get over 3,000. So they're short of 12,000 votes. So
yeah, I get you.
They have 12,000 votes. Sinn Féin has 34,500 votes. Fianna Fáil has 17,500 votes. So, like, it's stacked against them in a way, you know, that if Fianna Fáil is on any kind of a decent roll, they could easily take in two candidates. And, like, that's obviously their ambition.
All right.
And I'm not sure how realistic that is.
A caller says, listening in Guidor, is there a website to go and see who's standing in the Donegal constituency? Yes, there is. It's called highlandradio.com. And you can click into the election folder there. No. So, yes, Paddy.
We move away from that, you know, about people voting locally and so on and so forth. Thomas Pringle got two very good lifts the last time. One was from the surplus of Pierce Doherty. Mm-hmm. And the other one, surprise, surprise, was the distribution of Martin Harley's votes. Okay?
Yeah.
So Martin's from up, or he has family connections up there. So that was a case now of votes transferring from Fine Gael over to Thomas Pringle's
team.
Yeah,
no, you're right. I get you.
Ideologically, they are very, very different. But you see how people were sort of looking after their own.
Yeah, for sure. And I was only going, I have no, I mean, you've produced evidence there. I was just sort of my feel.
Oh, yeah. No,
so, I mean, listen, we're not going to play games here. But has either of the two of you, in terms of who you are confident might get elected, locked in for you, and how many seats outside of what you might be certain of are up for grabs? I mean, John, we've got as far as you seem convinced Padraig McLaughlin and Pierce Doherty are going to be okay, because you're looking at the math, but also you've got your ear to the ground. Can you go beyond that?
Charlie McConnell Logue definitely will be okay. He has very, very big canvas support on the ground, and he's pretty well got out on the canvas as well. I would have to say that he's working extremely hard, and he's just attending everything that moves. And he could substantially improve on his vote of the last time, but depending on what the sentiment is out there in the public, he could lose. He could lose a handful of votes. I don't think he's going to lose an awful lot, because a senior government minister for 4.5 years does mean something. It has to mean something, because you're spreading money around the place.
So that's three. After that, have you any?
After that, then, I think all the other seats are at play.
Up for grabs. Okay.
Thomas Pringle would be my favourite for the fourth seat, because let's look at it realistically. Thomas Pringle is well got across the county. He's a councillor on two occasions. He's been a TD in 2011, 16 and 20, and he has done extremely well. He's never too far out of the news, and he has a highly organised office in Killybegs.
Yeah. And he's got a good network throughout the county.
Huge network throughout the county. It just remains to be seen how that reacts to him on the day.
And Paddy, any? I mean, there's nothing certain, and you've got that quote in your back pocket to pull out. I'm just wondering if in fairness, this is a bit of a game, right? We don't know, and no reputations are at stake here. But I just wonder if your lineup, are you any further confidence in it?
I'd say the sort of consensus anyway that Pierce Doherty is going to do very well again, and he will be elected. Nobody likes that moniker on him, but he will be elected. John has an interesting point about Charlie McConnell, but he's going to be one to watch here. He lost 4,500 votes from the last two elections ago to the last one. And he cannot afford to lose any more, because once the count begins to play out here, where is Charlie McConlow going to get transfers? He needs to get it, most of it, on the first count. And can he do that with Micah playing in his own? We'll see. He, being a minister, as John said, it is important, and it'll give him certain kudos, and it'll give him a certain lift. But I suspect he's going to need all of it.
Yeah, he's definitely leaving no stone unturned. And obviously they know more than we do at this point. They've probably done some sampling themselves. Fianna Fáil is always good at doing sampling. They're at it for a long, long time. Fine Gael has been doing that over the years, but I don't think that's happening all that much now. Sinn Féin are continually sampling. They put in a third candidate there for a reason, and it's to stop votes drifting away from them. And that, in that part of Donegal, Killybegs, right up into Kilcar, Carrick and down into Glencolumbkill. There's a big, big vote up there. And also in the Donegal town area itself. Now, they weren't going to run three candidates, and the female, if they were going to run three earlier on, they would have thought of the name of Cora Harvey, should she be available. I don't know if that was right or not. But she would have been a great candidate sitting there in the Finn Valley.
Okay.
She would definitely be in the running for a third seat. Noel Jordan is a bit far south. He's going to have to depend on the same ground as the other, as his colleagues up there, right out along the Atlantic, from Donegal town up into Glencolumbkill. It's a big, big ask, but a lot's going to depend on how Doherty and McLaughlin hold up their vote.
Okay, it's all very fascinating. We'll reconvene. John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune newspaper, thank you very much indeed. Paddy Rooney, always a pleasure to chat to you really, really soon. And that was a second look at what's happening. We did one last week. We'll do one again next week. And that's going to be available for you to listen as a podcast on our website really soon.